we're back here on this Thursday, October the 11th, 2018. Mary Ellen Withrow, 40th Treasurer of the United States, is our guest today, and we're always glad to have her in studio. And I do want to let people know that coming up next Thursday, we have one of my favorite guests who comes on quite a bit with us. Dick Cavett will be along next week at 12:15 to 1, and we've got a guest tentatively confirmed next week for 1:15. I'm not going to tell you who it is. I'll tell you it is somebody, it's a name you'll know, and it's somebody who's close to President Trump and somebody who has not been on this show before. So there's the tease. I told Mary Ellen who it was during the break. So if you ask her, maybe she'll tell you who the...
Probably not.
That's keep it a secret.
Right.
Keep it under wraps. But, you know, we had Roger Stone on this show before the... It's not Roger Stone, audience. But yeah. Roger Stone was on this show twice. What an interesting person he was. He came on twice because he wrote a book negative on the Bushes, and then he wrote a book negative on the Clintons. Didn't seem like he liked anybody. And I see a lot of him on television now, Roger Stone. And
he always looked negative to me.
He was a big Nixon guy.
Yeah. He was involved in one of the campaigns against me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think, if I remember correctly, it was the race with Jeff Jacobs. He was involved in helping Jeff Jacobs. Yeah.
I never understood what his involvement was with President Trump, because I had him on during the election, and he always denied being part of the campaign, but he did say he talked to Trump often.
Yes, and you know, he's mentioned all the time. I don't know what's going to come out about him.
No charges yet.
No, but it's, I think it's coming, you know.
Yeah. Could be. On Sunday, there's going to be an interview on CNN. Christiane Amanpour did the interview with Hillary Clinton, and they've released an excerpt that we keep seeing now, that Hillary Clinton says that the Democrats cannot be civil anymore because they're not in power, and the Republicans don't understand civility. They said, we can be civil again, but we have to get in office because all the Republicans understand is power. What do you think of that statement by Hillary Clinton?
Well, that's an interesting statement. You know, all the things they're discovering that were done against her, it isn't any wonder that she lost. It's amazing to me that all of that was going on behind her, and you have no idea what the other side's doing.
Well, and this is why I think her political life is not over. I don't know that she'll ever run for anything, but I can't imagine that's how she'd want to leave the political realm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just doesn't seem... It's worth going over. You did events with her.
Yes.
And as a human being, you said she's a nice person.
She's very nice, yes. Yeah, we did the Sacagawea coin together, and she was the chairman of that that day. And, you know, I saw her all the time. I mean, she would be at things that I would be at, and she was always very nice, and I liked her, yeah.
But from the time she was First Lady, there was this thing put out that she was not nice, not easy to get along with, and it followed her right up till the last election.
I don't know where it came from. I don't understand it, so I don't know.
Maybe it was because she was the first lady to have an office in the West Wing. I remember that being a big thing.
Yeah, and she was complaining about the one of the departments, I remember, the... What was it, the where they put out the publicity or something? I remember there was a big to-do about that right away. You know, I've been listening to Melania Trump and her trip and watching all of that happened. And I heard an interview, it was this morning, about, you know, they ask her about women that are sexually abused, and she said, you shouldn't take their word for it, you should have proof. And I thought that was a very strange statement. Probably came from her husband.
What was the, I don't think we ever talked about, what was the thing with that jacket she had on?
I never found out about, I cannot understand that.
It was spray painted.
Yes.
Something like, I don't care.
I don't care, do you?
Yes. Yeah, so I don't know what that.
Nobody's ever explained it. And then there's this thing about the hat she had on in Africa, that it was the British, it was bad memories for the people there. I didn't realize that. I mean, I probably would have worn that hat, too, if I'd have been there.
I don't think she got up and picked out the hat.
No, probably not.
Somebody gave her the hat, and now she's getting all this trouble for the hat.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I think a lot about China right now, because we have this issue with China, mm-hmm, about trade. How do you think that's going to impact
us? I don't know. And they are upset, you know, and that's not good. See, that's the thing. Trump has the way of upsetting everybody on the face of the earth, and then he tries to fix it, and sometimes he thinks he has, and he probably hasn't, you know. So that's his whole philosophy, is to make a big storm about something and then say he's going to fix it.
You know, it's an interesting world we live in.
Yes.
I will say, I you know, politics has replaced Hollywood. More people watch news.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. When he was running for office, they covered him all the time because he was interesting. I was fascinated with him. I mean, I didn't like him, but I sat and watched him, you know.
He's interesting to watch.
Yes, he is. And I still watch him do those horrible speeches. They're horrible, but I enjoy them. Yeah, yeah. I enjoy them because they're so horrible.
Well, I think one of the problems is everybody always speaks off a teleprompter, and I don't think he does.
Well, when he does, he's really not interesting.
No.
No.
No, his inauguration speech, I think, was teleprompter, and that was an interesting speech.
Well, yeah. That was really bad because everybody was sitting, Obama was sitting there and Hillary was sitting there, and they had to listen to this, you know.
Well, even George W. Bush didn't look happy to me.
No, he wasn't happy either.
With that speech.
No, it was really bad.
Do you think the Republican Party will ever be the Republican Party it was before Trump?
I don't know, but I wish it would go back to having some strong standards like they used to have, not overspending and being, you know, they're the conservative party, be conservative, and they've lost it. It's totally lost.
Our governor is about to leave office after 8 years. What have you made? It's been an interesting 8 years with
Ron Kasich. Yeah, he stood up for what he thought was right. Whether it's right or not, well, nobody knows, but he's tried to do what he thought was right.
Do you think he's going to run for president?
I think he might. I think he's thinking about it. I don't know, you know.
I don't know how he's going to do it.
No, you got to have so much money. How are you going to get the money? And if he runs as an independent, he'd have to run as an independent or a Green Party or something. Run as a Green Party? Yeah.
Well, yeah,
can you imagine running in the Green Party?
You know, I don't. Do you have to believe what they believe?
I don't know if they make you sign a paper or not, but they'd have to. They have their beliefs, you know.
Well, they and these libertarians, they have them too.
Yeah,
but they
sure
do. They do have ballot access.
Yeah,
in 50 states.
Yeah,
that's what you need. You need somebody who's going to
get that. On the ballot for.
you have to get on the ballot, but they won't let you in the debates.
And that's good. I think that's good.
I think that's ultimately their downfall.
You do?
Yeah, I think if people saw them.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
No, I don't think they should be on the debates. It's just two people on a debate. You get more people and it gets to be ridiculous, you know?
What do you think the, because as soon as we're done with this election, it's going to be the Democratic primary for president.
Right.
And what do you think the number is going to be like?
Oh, it's going to be enormous, probably.
How do you deal with it? I don't even.
Well, it was it 18 for the Republicans last time? And I bet we have that many.
I don't know what you do.
You know, politics is so interesting. Where are you going to have anything more interesting than that? I just am fascinated by it.
Do you think Joe Biden will run?
Well, you know, I think he's sounding and looking a little bit like he would. I kind of hoping for a younger group to come along. I think that's what we need in the Democratic Party is some younger people.
Well, the people I keep hearing that are pretty much likely to run are Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, and a lot of people think Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I like Kamala Harris.
I don't know. See, it's a funny thing because who's running the Democratic Party, I think, will make a big impact here. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of people. I saw Donna Brazile on a show the other day.
Oh, Donna Brazile is who I was trying to think of a minute ago.
Oh, that was...
She was a good head of the party. When she had it, she did a good job.
Well, I saw her on a show the other day where she was saying that this new group of Democrats have come and they've pushed her out.
Have they?
Yeah, because they want young and they want new and they don't want the old anymore. And that she had a funny quote, and I don't want to say it because I'll misquote her, but it was something like, it's fine that you sit at the table, but use coasters because I help set that table, or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But that she felt pushed to the side because of her age.
Did she? Well, I don't know what it is, but when people have run, well, like Bernie Sanders, I just don't want to see him run again, you know?
Well, I saw on CNN the other day when they released this Hillary Clinton clip, just the clip, all of a sudden the Democrats, oh, geez, why is she out there again? Put her away. Don't let her do it. And one of the people said, she's been First Lady. She's been Secretary of State. She was the nominee. She has a right to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't want to hear from her. I don't know what's going on there.
Well, I think it's the basic feeling of people that they want to see something new come along and new ideas. And I sort of feel that way.
Do you think it lays with what the traditional Democratic Party was, or are they going to have to go further over to the left?
Well, I don't think they should go further to the left. I think that's why Elizabeth Warren would have a problem. I think you have to go to the left a little bit to get through the primary, and then you got to get back to the center for the general. And you got to know how to do it, and it's not always easy.
Do you think this Avenatti, this lawyer, will run?
I don't know. I don't know.
Eric Holder looked like he was going to run when I saw him last. He was Obama's first attorney general.
Yeah.
He seemed like he was making some strides.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
If the Democrats don't win this November, what is that going to say?
Well, yeah. Well, I think they will. I think they'll win.
What happened to the Democratic Party, in your opinion, over the last 8 years? The president was a popular Democratic president, but it seemed like at the state level and the local level.
Well, they said that Obama didn't cultivate the lower people in office enough. I think that's probably true. But he had his hands full with what he was doing. But you have to keep building from the bottom up. You got to get people to run for the school board and to get started. And then it's a few years where they're going to get noticed, you know.
When you got on the school board, did you have any intention to go beyond the school board?
No, not at all. No.
How did the next position?
Well, the party asked me to run for clerk of courts, and that's how it started. And then when I lost, then they wanted me to run for county treasurer, and that, you know, that was an interesting time because Francis, what was his name that I ran against for county treasurer? Francis something. He had a meat market. Anyway, what was I going to say? He fell and broke his hip. And I said, if I don't win this one, I'm not running again. You know, this is it. And, but I had had the license bureau at that time, at that point in my life. The license bureau got my name known in Marion County, and that's the reason I took it. I took it because I told the governor, I said, I want to run for office. I said, I just lost a race. Nobody knows my name. And my name's on everything at the license bureau, so that made a big difference. And when I ran for county treasurer, your original question was what?
As you went along, did your ambition grow?
Well, it developed. Yeah, it did. I would. It had to be the right people asking me, or I wouldn't pay any attention. It had to be people of substance that were asking me to do things, to go to another level. But then when I was U.S. Treasurer, and everybody that was of importance in the Democratic Party called me and wanted me to run that year, and it didn't faze me because I was happy where I was. But you, if you're in an office for a while, you think, I've done all I can do. I want to move on. And that's the way I felt. You know, I felt I'd done all I could in the county treasurer's office, and I wanted to move on, and didn't think about running for state treasurer. But then Gertrude Donahue asked me to run, and it was so strange. Strange course of developments that cause you to do what you do.
So when you were Marion County Treasurer, you had planned to leave, but had no plans to run again.
Right. I felt that I had accomplished all I wanted to accomplish. And I went over to this, I forget where this meeting was that Gertrude was speaking. And a group of us went over, and it was right after that. I know that's she saw me and thought, well, she'd be good to run for treasurer because she was having the embezzlement problem, and she said, I have to raise at least $750,000, and I don't think I can raise that much to run. And she said, I'd like to have you run. And then she wanted me to register for Secretary of State and treasurer, not make up my mind right away because she could decide to stay on. Yeah, it was one of those things. And so it went on for quite a while about the, like that. And then I finally, people figured out what was going on, really. You can only hide it so long. And so then when I decided to run for state treasurer, I had no money, and Buck Reinhart had $500,000, and I had no materials to pass out, and it was rough. But then things started to come together, and yeah.
The original office, Elgin School Board, what propelled you to run for that?
Well, two teachers that lived close to me, came down and wanted me to run for school board. That was the start of it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I ran against, and every time a man would get in the race. Of course, I was the only woman. There hadn't been a woman on the board. And every time a man would get in the race, I'd get all nervous, and Norman would say, "You think you can't beat them?"
You know, it's interesting. Recently, you celebrated a very great number anniversary-wise.
Yes, with Norman. I did.
My good. So what's the secret to that? How in the world do you stay married for that amount of and happy?
Well, yeah. Well, I tell you, you know, the time just goes by, and there it is. You know, I thought I'd never be alive that long, you know. That's another thing. Well, and so anyway, that's
well, I always thought he is such an interesting guy, your husband.
He is. He always had my back.
Well, that
and he was ready to fight no matter.
Well, I think about in those days, yeah, there certainly was this thing about male chauvinism in your days.
Yeah.
And he supported you.
Yes.
And What a unique man he is.
That's right. And I heard people make fun of him because of me. Yeah, it didn't bother him.
Yeah.
He thought they were stupid, you know, to say that. And they were. He was always, he always supported me. And it was not easy for him, but he did a good job.
Yes, and has done a good job.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Was he as excited as you were when these accomplishments would come?
Yes, he was very excited. It was always tremendous when I was sworn in, you know.
What are your kids, now that your kids are older, what do they think of those times and what you...
Oh, they... this is kind of funny. My daughter went to the Democratic headquarters there in Akron the other day and wanted to campaign for Rich Cordray, and the woman wanted her to stand outside the... where they register to vote. And my daughter said, "Well, I want to go door to door." And the woman said, "Well, have you ever done that?" And she said, "Yes, I've done a lot of it." She said, "My mother was Mary Ellen Withrow." And she said, "I just watched this woman's thinking process take place." They were involved, and they had to behave themselves, you know. And I remember my daughter saying, "What a load I put on." That was my youngest daughter.
Your grandkids, who were pretty young during those days.
Yes.
What do they think now that time has passed?
Well, you know, they... I ought to ask them what they think. They don't say anything about what they think of, you know. And it's just that it's there. And then the younger grandkids that weren't alive when I was elected and all that, they didn't realize. And then people'd say, "Oh, your grandmother's Mary Ellen Withrow," and that they kind of, you know, they kind of realize then that people knew me. And yeah, it's interesting. How they react to things. They just take it as it's there, you know.
Have any of them shown interest in politics?
Well, after the last presidential election, my daughter Linda said, "I'm going to run for office." Now, this is the one that had a door slammed in her face one time when I was running, and she said, "I'm never running for public office." But she couldn't decide what to run for, so she's still not running for office. And she might, you know, down
the
road.
That'd be
interesting. Yeah. She gets involved, and she's very good at what she does, so I know she'd do a good job.
I think we have a call here. Caller, are you there? Nope, lost the call. Well, if that's you, call back. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If that was you, call back in. When you were in office, did that make holidays, birthdays difficult? because
well,
of a schedule?
Well, no, I made sure that, well, I remember when my one granddaughter was born. She was born 5 days before the election for state treasurer. And I didn't get to see her. I was out on the road, and I didn't get to see her until several days after that. And I really wanted to, you know, be home. But, and, you know, you don't see your daughter go to the prom. You're out campaigning somewhere. All of those things, they go by the wayside a little bit.
Do you have any regrets?
I don't have any regrets, no.
When you decided to run for Elgin School Board, was there anything else at that point that you wanted to do, had interest in doing?
No. I was very involved in the community. I was in a lot of organizations, and I was very, very active. But I had not thought about getting into politics.
Have you kept a lot of things from your past campaigns?
Not a lot, but I've got some matches. And I have some recipe books. That was state treasurer. The matches were county treasurer. I had fingernail files, clerk of courts. And somebody brought in a bumper sticker the other day that had been for clerk of courts, and it's in bad shape, but I put it in the museum because it was interesting, and mainly because those bumper stickers, they couldn't get them off their car. I don't know how he got it off his car.
Well, that's the thing. People have become so guarded about their cars. I don't know if people do bumper stickers anymore.
No, I don't think people want... in fact, they're getting kind of funny about yard signs, too, I think.
They are.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not sure, for somebody who's running for office now, what advice would you give them on how to win?
Well, you almost have to have television and radio. I think both. I think radio is very important. I think radio was very important for me. Of course, you know, I didn't have any money for television that first time I ran for state treasurer, and Dick Celeste paid for the it was the last weekend of the campaign for my television. And it probably wouldn't have won without it, you know?
You know, we had the last guard from Alcatraz in, and he spoke in the community room at Harding, which I had never been in, at Harding High School. And I walked in there. We got there early to set up the equipment for the last guard from Alcatraz. And there's a picture of you in there, a very nice, good-sized picture. Where did that picture come from?
I gave it to him. Some guy was standing with me when I was there one day for something, and he said, well, I think they ought to have a picture of George Bush up there. And I said, well, as far as I know, he didn't go to Harding.
Well, that's true. I think you're right about that. Yeah. But it's next week, Tuesday, I think, is the League of Women Voters Candidates Night. It's going to be held in that room.
Oh, is it?
What I understood.
Yes.
So for people who attend, your picture will be right there.
Oh, good.
Behind them.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's...
Well, I didn't know it was up in there.
I think that's what I've been told.
Yeah.
I think 7:30 next Tuesday, the 16th.
They have a picture of me. I know at Elgin in the office, there's a picture of me.
Do you get a lot of requests for things? Have you gotten a lot of requests?
No, I don't think so. No.
Is it hard to give stuff away like that?
No. I'm glad to get rid of it.
Do you have something that you treasure from your career more than anything else?
Well, I probably treasure the appointment. I'll tell you that the thing that was most impressive to me for quite a while, but it isn't still, but it was the Donald L. Scantlebury Award for my management. And I was very proud of that. And then the Most Valuable State Public Official. I was thrilled to death when I got that. And you know, those are hard to come by, really, because you got a lot of people out there trying to get awards.
You recently, I think since we had you on last, have had a birthday.
Yes.
Did you do something?
No, didn't do anything. Let's see. Oh, I went and had a facial. I said, boy, if anybody needs it, I do. I had a facial, I had a pedicure and a manicure, and I'm trying to do everything I can.
I don't think you need it. I don't think you need it at all.
Well, my daughter asked me, she said, has anybody told you how good you look? I had never had one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was interesting.
It's the full works, I guess.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You know, the radio station used to be across from the place where they did the manicures and pedicures in the mall.
Oh, yeah.
And you couldn't help but see it because it was windows. And boy, they were busy.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
Yeah, well, they do manicures and pedicures now at Primrose.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, so that's convenient. I'm glad they do that. But, my daughters will always ask me what I want to do for my birthday. And last year I went to the casino, and I may do that. I've still got a couple of birthday presents coming. I may put in a request for something like that again.
Go to the casino. That's right. Those are fun things to do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That was really a revolutionary thing. Us finally getting that passed in Ohio took a long time.
Yeah. And it's very, very interesting. All of that, I felt very strongly about it myself, or I would never have done it. When they came to me, I had said all along when I was state treasurer, I said, all that money's going out of Ohio, and it's ridiculous. Everybody's going to the states all around us and going to casinos. And you talk to some of my best friends, they didn't vote for it, you know.
Yeah. Well, like I say, it failed in Marion County, and I was shocked because...
The churches are too very strong.
Well, I thought you did a lot of really effective commercials for that, and I could not believe in Marion it failed, but it did. It passed, so we reaped the rewards from it.
Yeah, well, it's just another case. You can't pass your opinion on to somebody else. They have their own opinions, you know.
When you left office in 2000, what kind of offers came your way for things to do? Is there
a lot of speeches.
I bet.
Yeah, a lot of speeches. And, I had to write my own letters and make my own. I really missed my secretaries.
I bet it's a big change.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
From office to...
Yeah, you're all alone. And they still help me out a little bit, but... I didn't want to ask them because, you know, and it's an abrupt change, very abrupt, yeah.
When you went out and made speeches, usually what topics were you speaking on?
I talk about what I did in office, yeah. That's what they wanted to, hear stories. They liked stories. They liked, they don't know what you do until you tell them, you know. They have no idea what your job's like.
You know, I was thinking earlier on, you mentioned Lloyd Benson.
Mm-hmm.
He had one of those great lines
in
that quail debate.
Yes.
You know, I knew John Kennedy.
Yes, and you're no John Kennedy.
You're no John Kennedy.
He was the nicest man. He was my favorite because... He understood what I had gone through because he had gone through it. He had run. We were the only two people in Treasury who had run for office.
What is something about you that nobody knows?
Boy, probably a million things. Let me think. I don't know, Scott. That's a hard question.
It's interesting, for people who are listening. I was at the library a couple weeks ago, and they have a. It's not labeled well, but if you go into the Ohio room at the Marion Public Library, there's a file cabinet which is open to the public, and it has newspaper articles and things kind of indexed in there. And you have your own folder.
I do.
You do. And I pulled some stuff out of there that I did not realize.
What?
Well, just I little things along the way, like when you were elected. It's interesting to see how it was covered here in Marion mm-hmm. when you were appointed to, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a big, and I remember it, it was a big, big deal. Did you realize how big it was here in Marion?
Mm-hmm.
It was big.
Yeah. I don't think I really absorbed it right away, but I did afterwards. But Carl Hughes always had all the Marion Star articles framed and gave to me, and you think afterwards you realize maybe it was a little bit bigger than you thought, yeah.
Well, it's interesting because there's some pictures in there and some things from your early days, and it's a fascinating folder to look through
uh-huh.
because it puts you back in that time. And the one thing that surprised me the most, I guess you get a little bit removed from something and you don't think about it, is how often when you would come back, you would do something while in that position, go to a school or but most people don't do that. Most people, once they've went on to something bigger, they don't come back.
Mm-hmm.
But you did.
Yeah, I did. I always felt good that they invited me to come to things. And the first year I was U.S. Treasurer, I was invited to every school but Elgin.
Well, that's interesting.
I thought it was, too. I don't remember what the deal was at Elgin, but anyway, I did Ridgedale, and I did it mainly because the man that asked me had been my chief of staff, and I thoroughly enjoy talking about what I did, and I really want young people to understand what that job was like, and to know the history, because most of them weren't born when I left office, you know?
Well, that's why I feel, and I started off the 2 hours by saying, I really do sincerely mean that people need to come to your museum.
Yeah.
And and you're going to be with us for a long time, but for you to give the tour
mm-hmm.
is really an amazing thing
yeah.
for somebody to go through. Because there is this feeling in Marion for some time now that, this is a bad place to start and I can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I do one trip through your museum and a conversation with you, and they should realize that in recent times, in the 20th century, you certainly did, so they could too.
We had some Tri-Rivers They're in training at Tri-Rivers for nursing, I believe. They came out the other day, and I always take that group through my museum when they're there, and they were so impressed. They were talking about it. They had never heard of me, you know, and they weren't born when I was in office, and they were very excited about it. Yeah.
Well, for people who don't remember, and I think most do, but it was a you and Harding
mm-hmm.
in the history of the country,
mm-hmm.
only two from Marion, Ohio, to go to the national level. And I think in your time, it was harder because there was television, there was radio. Certainly in Harding's day, there wasn't a lot of that going
yeah.
around.
Yeah.
And also, you know, as silly as it seems to say, a woman, you were the first mm-hmm. to do that on the city, county, state and national level.
Yeah,
and
I think still as a first person.
Yeah. So, you know, it you had to have something. Do you know what it was that when you look back at that, you had to have something? I mean, it just couldn't have been luck.
That's right.
Something
we've happened. Often Norman and I have often talked about that, and well, I think God helped me, you know.
Belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you had to have that because it was really very very hard things that I did. Yeah.
Do you ever think what your parents would have thought?
Well, my dad would have been out there campaigning. I know my mother was always so proud, and I think about that a lot. Yeah.
What did your parents instill in you?
Well, you know, they were terrific parents, and they couldn't have been any better parents, and they always were having me do things. Like I sang a lot from about the age of 5 till the age of 12. Well, I sang after that too, but then I took up piano lessons, and all of that, all of those lessons I took, I think that had something to do with my desire to improve, whatever. Yeah.
What made you a Democrat? What were the essential?
Well, my family, my grandfather was a very strong Democrat, and my dad was, and my mother, my whole family. And I always felt that the Democratic Party helped the little people. And I felt that's what needed to be done, you know.
We have about 4 minutes left, and I one of the things I want to cover here is Rich Cordray and Mike DeWine, because we haven't done that this hour, and you are a big supporter of Rich Cordray.
Yes.
A treasurer of the campaign. Mm-hmm. For people who haven't made up their mind, which apparently is still a pretty hefty bunch, what do you say to those people?
Well, I say that he is really ready to be governor because he has held so many different positions, and he was, you know, I swore him in as state treasurer, and then he had the link he called it another name, but he used the link deposit program when he was state treasurer, and then he became attorney general. He was appointed by Governor Strickland to that position and only held it for 2 years. And then he lost that race between him and DeWine by 1 percentage point. And then he became the Consumer Protection Bureau director. And he did some wonderful things when he was there. He confiscated $12 billion for 30 million families. And talk about something that's hard to do, getting money back from Wall Street and the big banks, because I've dealt with big banks in my job, and I know how difficult that is. And he has, he's very, very smart, and he thinks of ways to help people all the time. That is what he really is good at, because he cares about people. And that's what I appreciate so much about him, because he's not thinking about himself. He's thinking about what he can do as governor. And that's so important in a political position. You don't go there just to be there. You go to do as much as you can do for the people. And that's what he'll do.
Somebody commented last week, there was a get-together last week that you and he both attended, that it really seemed like a genuine relationship between you mm-hmm. two, that it's not just political,
no.
That it's a real friendship.
That's right. It is a real friendship. He has been a friend of mine for a long, long time, and It's over the years I've stayed close touch to him, and when we were both in Washington, we would get together once in a while, and he was always there for me. Yeah.
Before we wrap up, do you have any feelings, being the former state treasurer, about what's going on with the treasury? You don't hear a lot about that anymore.
No, I don't even know who's running against Rob Richardson. Of course, I'm supporting Rob Richardson. I don't even know who's running against him.
Did the treasurer just decide to not do it anymore? Was that what happened?
Yeah. I don't know the reasoning behind it, but that's what he did, yeah.
Because at one point, he was running against Sherrod Brown again.
Yeah, right.
And now he's just completely given everything up cold turkey.
You don't hear anything.
You don't hear anything at all about him.
No,
We have about a minute, but what was the main job of Treasurer of Ohio? What was the big thing that needed to be watched and gotten done?
Well, you collect, protect, and invest the money of the people, for the people of Ohio. And that investment and that management, what you can do with that money while it's there, that it is the linked deposit program, and then the thing, there's a lot of things you can do in an office. Some people just get in an office and they don't create anything. You want to see creativity, and that's what you'll see with Rich Cordray, is ideas that he has and things that will improve the state of Ohio. His speech during the debate, he talked a lot about the local government money and how he wants to see that come back to the local government, because that was terrible what happened here. That local government money was taken away and they had to raise taxes. I was involved in that. I came back from Bethesda and they wanted me to speak out, and I thought, well, if there's anything I ought to be doing, it's to help the people of Marion County. So I did, and it's because they'd taken away their local government money, which was terrible. They got $3 billion in the rainy day fund. They can't have over that.
What would be a rainy day?
It's, well, an emergency of some kind. Say we had a tornado here in Ohio, and it did a lot of damage, you know.
So that's where that would, because I
don't know. They've got their, I don't know for sure, but
I know there's a lot of money in there now.
See, I wasn't in charge of the rainy day fund. That's the governor's
that's
job.
That's the governor. Yeah, yeah. And I know that's one of the things Kasich likes to talk about, is mm-hmm. that he's got this
rainy
day.
Well, he took it away from all the local governments.
So I wonder what happens, you know, if it's starting to be given back, do we just leave that $3 billion?
Well, you have to keep a certain percentage there, and you know, it was it's always been an issue.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to let everybody know again, the guest has been Mary Ellen Withrow, 40th Treasurer of the United States. Her museum is at Primrose, where if you know where the YMCA is on Barks Road, you just hang a right or a left there. Depends on which direction you're coming from. But the road by the Y, follow it around and you will find Primrose. And if you want to go through the museum, call Primrose and make an appointment. Mary Ellen will set that up with you. It's a tremendous thing to see for anybody in your family. It's a real piece of history. And Mary Ellen, it's always a pleasure. And I always thank you immensely for coming, and it's always a good time.
It's always a pleasure for me, Scott.
Yep, thank you. Mary Ellen Withrow will be back tomorrow with more programming. We're going to talk about this Sherry Hall letter tomorrow, Harding Home, at noon, so don't miss that. Stay tuned for more programming.
And be terrified on a haunted trail, all under the control of the Headless Horseman. Open every Thursday through Saturday in October at 7 p.m. and a performance-only matinee Sundays at 3. Produced by the